methodical process.
How can KBOO listeners hear more?
We are the stories that we've already done are already on the KBOO website. We did one story which was an introduction to ALEC. We did a story about GMOs. As I said on Monday, we just did a story about education. All of our stories will be posted on the KBOO website. And if you want to find out more about the American Legislative Exchange Council, you can go first to their website. They do have a website, www.alec.org. You can also go to SourceWatch, PR Watch. You can go to ALEC Exposed, which is a website that was created to investigate ALEC. There are all kinds of sources you can go. In fact, Bill Moyer, Terry Gross, they've done interviews with representatives of ALEC. So there's a lot of information out there.
Great. Well, thank you so much for all of your hard work on this very important KBOO project.
It's a great team. Yana Maximova, Mike Klepfer, Sam Smith, and Sam Bowman, all great reporters.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you, Don. Be sure to check out our website for important community events. They'll be on the right-hand column of the homepage, and you'll get more information about Don's important work on ALEC. Also, spread the word. KBOO is taking applications for its board of directors, and more information is available at kboo.fm. Thank you very much, Monica, and thank you, Don.
Thank you.
And thank you, all you listeners, for joining us for News from the Boo. We will speak with you all again next week.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio proudly present Nightmares on Wax Live, playing at the Clinton Street Theater as a benefit for KBOO Thursday, July 10th at 7 p.m. Performance comes from a sold-out show at The Refuge in Portland on Thanksgiving evening 2013. If you are one of the lucky ones who made it in, there's a good chance you are on the video. If you missed the show that night, this is a rare peek into a high-energy performance from DJ Ease and the Nightmares on Wax old band. That's Nightmares on Wax live, playing at the Clinton Street Theater, July 10th at 7 p.m. Go to kboo.fm for more information.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of PDX Pop Now 2014. From Friday, July 18th until Sunday, July 20th, PDX Pop Now will host bands on two stages, celebrating and supporting all ages music in the city of Portland with bands such as The Bugs, The Portland Cello Project, The Estranged, Purse Candy, Orchestra Pacific Tropical, Summer Cannibals, and many more. PDX Pop will take place at Audio Cinema, 226 Southeast Madison Avenue in Portland. More information about PDX Pop Now 2014 can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-1212. In Vancouver at 360-694-1234 or RadioCab.net.
You're listening to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 in Portland. I'm Ibrahim Mubarak of Right to Survive. On this show, we go to Ground Zero, Portland, Oregon, and report news and stories that corporate media don't cover. We'll bring the uncut reality from the perspective of the unhoused community.
This is Lisa Fay with Right to Survive Radio. R2S Radio goes into the houseless community, making their voices heard, speaking to individuals on subjects that directly relate to their daily struggles.
Somebody help me.
That's work.
This is not healthy.
Oh, man.
I am not wealthy.
What I do, have the power to break the chains.
Doing what's right, you.
Bye.
90.7 FM on your radio dial. And today we're on Ground Zero in Portland, Oregon, in the houseless community. And our topic is healthcare in the houseless community. And today we're here with...
I'm Camilo Marquez. I'm a retired psychiatrist, and I came out here after I retired about...
We're asking you and talking to you because we know you have something to do with healthcare, single payer. So the question is, can you tell us the difference between Obamacare, single payer, and Cover Oregon?
Cover Oregon is a part of Obamacare. Obamacare consists of a number of reforms that were really very significant. The ones we already know about is the ability to have your child on the parents' health care until they're 26, the no longer allowable exclusions for certain disorders, no lifetime limits, a number of the restrictions that insurance companies had, which was a way of essentially reducing their risk and improving their profitability, have been eliminated. So that makes a big difference. The rest of the Obamacare program has to do with an expansion of the availability of health care. The biggest expansion comes from the expansion of Medicaid. That is really the most significant in terms of numbers, improvement for access to care. We have here in Oregon an ambitious program, and you might also want to know the difference between what is the Oregon Health Transformation with the Oregon Health Plan, which is a part of Medicaid and the expansion of Medicaid under Obamacare. The other aspect of the expansion is the healthcare exchange. The healthcare exchange is what Cover Oregon is. There were a number of state exchanges, and by exchange we mean a marketplace that exists on the internet and is a place where companies offer insurance and people can go to look for a policy that suits them. We know the problems that we had here in Oregon with Cover Oregon were really very, very unfortunate because we had an ambitious plan and the concept is so complicated, the process just didn't work. I don't think it's just a matter of the technology, but also because of the basic of the expansion. So what's happened now is that the state will use the federal exchanges. What happens on the exchange is that there are different levels of subsidy available depending upon your income, and there's a range of different plans. You may have heard them referred to by different metals, bronze, silver, gold, platinum. While all these reforms have been positive, there are a number of important things that they failed to do. First of all, they failed to correct what is the fundamental problem in healthcare, and that is that it's essentially for profit, treats health as a commodity. It's basically controlled by your employers and the insurance companies. That distinction leaves something that was just in the news, the ruling in the Supreme Court about contraceptives, possible because healthcare being offered by employers think that they have a right to decide what people should have and not have based on their personal religious preferences. Well, birth control is considered to be sinful, apparently, by certain religious practices of these employers. And
if your employee was one of those spiritual people that don't believe in birth control, then if they wouldn't give you the proper insurance to protect yourself, because that's, like you said, that's between the employee and the employer and the health insurance
company. The flaw with this is that why should healthcare be something that is a part of your compensation package from an employer? Mm-hmm. And if that's what it really is, if it's really a part of your compensation, what does anybody's beliefs have to do with it? Your compensation is your compensation. Your benefit is your benefit, and nobody should have the right to decide what is appropriate for you.
Okay. Now, due to popular belief, a lot of houseless people do work, but some don't. Now, what happens when they don't work? How is that affecting their health care?
Well, the whole idea that healthcare should be a benefit for people who work is, in my point of view, completely absurd. Mm-hmm. It's something that should be available to everybody regardless of their circumstances. And this is the only country where that kind of system is prevalent. And the consequences of this are when a person loses a job and wants to change a job, they're not able to do that. People get stuck in situations that they don't want, and they have to make all kinds of compromises in order to have health coverage.
Okay.
But health coverage should be something that's universally available regardless of your circumstances, regardless of your employment, regardless of your health status.
See, I believe in universal. A houseless person, people are forced to get Obamacare. And this is the problem that we're finding with Obamacare. It wasn't designed to help the houseless community. It was designed to help people with low income wages able to pay into it.
Well, I think that, I mean, if you're talking about somebody's houseless, you're talking about someone who's poor, who's indigent. They should be eligible for coverage under the Oregon Health Plan. Okay. So anyone in those circumstances should have every opportunity to have standard coverage. The one thing that I mentioned before that is happening in Oregon is the healthcare transformation, which means that the way services are being delivered is through coordinated care organizations. And these are integrated health providers that basically cover all services. Mm-hmm. And they are responsible for a specific population. And they are being innovative by providing a lot of preventative care in order to reduce their overall costs, keep people out of the hospital.
Okay. Now, what if, for instance, Lisa, she have a job, she worked 3 days a week, she don't make enough where her company would give her insurance, but she make under the $15,000 where she can't get Obamacare?
So are you making too much money to be eligible for the Oregon Health Plan?
They're putting me in a roundabout position. They want me to purchase health care, but since I make under the minimum or the maximum amount before you have to start paying. And here's where the catch-22 is. If I pay for health insurance, I have to give up one of three things. I have to give up my home because I would have to pay for the health care, or I would have to give up driving to work because I wouldn't be able to afford my car, or three, because of the hours I work, I would have to give up my job because there's no public transportation that would get me to my job at the hour I work to pay for health.
So essentially what you're saying is what's available to you is too costly, and it requires you to make sacrifices or an impossible choice.
Mm-hmm. And we find that with people living on the streets, because some of them have a part-time job or a temporary part-time jobs. And when they find work, they have to let the healthcare people know they're working, and then they start deducting that out their check, which make them even lower income.
Yeah, I think that if I understand correctly, what you're talking about is the problem of what they call churn. So the way the system works is that under a certain level of income, which is 138% of the federal poverty level, which is about $15,000 and something for a single individual, you are eligible for Medicaid. Above that, you're asked to go into the exchange. So if your income goes up, that means you get pushed off of healthcare for all Oregon and you have to go on to the exchange. It sounds like that's the situation that you're describing. So what they're trying to do about this, and you are not alone, there are over 100,000 people in the state of Oregon who are in that situation, roughly between 138% of the federal poverty level and 400% of the federal poverty level. The state is trying to fill in this gap with something called the Basic Health Plan, and there is a study that's going on right now to determine how to respond to this. You know, it doesn't do anything for you now while you need help, but something is in the works.
And now, and also in the houseless community, what we've been listening to people is that their treatment is more like being jimmy-rigged and being put outside with no place to recuperate.
Well, that is a key question. And I asked you before to try to recall this film that was very popular about a schizophrenic played by James Fox, who was a brilliant, I think he was a musician. And there was a social worker who was trying to help him And what the essential requirement was for his stability was to have housing. And in my experience as a psychiatrist, working with severely ill population, people with severe diagnoses of schizophrenia, which essentially compromises a lot of your adaptive functioning, a great deal of support is needed. And the support can get people rehabilitated, but it can't happen if there isn't the stability of adequate housing. It goes without saying that housing is a part of what is necessary in order to be healthy.
Yes.
And, yes. You know, I am a healthcare advocate, and we believe that healthcare is a human right. And that doesn't make any sense if you don't have housing. I mean, housing and healthcare go together, and they both are human rights. And you cannot work on one without really considering the essential requirements of the other.
This is Ibrahim Mubar from Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And today we are on Ground Zero in Portland, Oregon in the houseless community. And my topic is health care in the houseless community. And today I'm here with Aaron from Right to Dream. Okay, how long have you been houseless?
I've been houseless on and off for about 35 years.
Okay, in 35 years, wow, you've seen a lot come and a lot go, and you've seen a lot of things happen. How's your health today?
I'm going to say it's probably, it should be better, but it's not real terrible.
And is it due to the situation you're living in or your medical need?
Probably a little of both.
Uh-huh.
Medical needs are not met.
Uh-huh.
Now they have that, gotta get insurance. I have, yeah, but I haven't released it yet.
I know you've been, 35 years, Obama only been president for, 6 years? So before this came up where you have to get Medicare, in 35 years you've been sick on and off. How was your treatment from the healthcare specialist or the hospital in that time before Obamacare?
I would say it was okay, because the only times I ever used hospital was when I was in dire need, so they obviously got me better.
So why do you think people in the houseless community only go to the hospital, dentist, or clinic when it's a dire need?
Some of them just do the basics and ship you on your way. Some of them know that if you're on the street, what they did for you, it's not really going to do much good if they just put you right back on the street. So they have to put you somewhere to get a little bit better so you don't end up right back.
Uh-huh. Is it nurse or the doctors that's doing this?
The doctor's the one that has the ultimate call as to where you go and what happens with you. Because he's the one that did the work on you, and he's the one ultimately responsible, I guess. So he's the one that will say, well, we're going to put him in a hotel for a week after we're done with him, or we're going to try and call Central Citizens Recuperation Care or whatever other programs she may be eligible to get into. That's up to the doctor.
You all let the doctor know if you're houseless or not, and they prescribe a recuperating service for you,
yes.
If that's what you're saying.
Yes.
And they do that often, or they don't? It depends on what social status you belong to.
For me, it's been kind of like a hit and miss, but some people go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth.
Don't doctor have a rule, an oath or something, like lawyers got an oath that they take this oath to heal the world or heal the sick, no matter what color, what ethnicity, what spirituality or social status you belong to?
Right.
Am I supposed
to do that?
Yeah. Because I'm just thinking, when going to school, you hear all of this, but then once you leave home and go into the real world, you don't see this. It's different. Yeah. Now, let's talk about you for an instant. I know one time that you had to go get some skin graft on your leg. And can you tell the listening audience what happened with that?
After the skin graft, the hospital held me until they thought I was able to not be in the hospital, so I'm on my own on the outside. They figured 2 weeks, because I'm basically good enough not to be in the hospital, but I wasn't well enough to be on the street either, because it was just coming out of winter.
So I was with the understanding that they was going to put you in the streets, and you contacted Right to Survive, and we went and talked to a caseworker to keep you longer.
As I remember, every day they would ask me where I'm going when I left, and I told them I'd come back here, and they said, we're not ready today. And then finally one morning they said, well, what if we put you in a hotel? Would you be willing to go? And I said, well, yeah. So I'm not really sure how that came about.
Yeah. So do you think they should have aftercare or recuperating centers in the hospital?
In some situations,
like mine was at a real awkward place to get to.
Mm-hmm.
I needed two people instead of one people to do it. Yeah. Some of them should be in the hospital, or at least where they have medical people come around, I'll say three, maybe four times a day to check on you and make sure everything's right.
Uh-huh. When you went to the motel, what motel did they put you in?
The Joyce Hotel.
The Joyce Hotel, that's...
one of the diviest hotels in the world.
You better believe it. I didn't want to say it. I'm glad you said it, because you went there. Who helped you with your bandages, cleaning and...
I had to do it myself.
And it was hard.
Yeah.
So they didn't have no follow-up work? Is that what?
First week they pulled the stitches out and they took pictures. The second week they just pulled it apart and took pictures. And the third week they just took it apart and took pictures.
Okay. If they put you back out in the street or in these dive hotels, as you say, how did you eat? How did you find a cook for yourself?
There was a store like 3/4 of a block away, so I just went there and got, you know, convenient food.
Right. So even in your pain, where you're supposed to be resting and recuperating, you had to move.
Right.
And you could have bust a stitch or something to go get
down the stairs and ripped it all apart.
Again. So do you think Obamacare or Oregon Health Plan or whatever was designed to help with the houseless community in mind?
I don't know, because it's like a song.
How was your treatment when you went into the hospital from the receptionist or the nurse?
They were pretty slow at doing anything with me until they found out what I had. Then it was all about get busy and do something.
Mm-hmm. So they didn't treat you bad, snobby, at you, anything. So what would you like to see in there? I mean, if you don't know what was in there, what would you like to see was in there?
Well, I would like to see probably people that go in should probably be in a little longer, because some of them go in with seizures they've had. We've had other situations here, and they're back out later that day, and then they have another one that night. So they obviously didn't do very much for them the first time, and they should keep a little longer and figure out what the problem is.
It's like a revolving door.
Yeah, a revolving hospital door for some of the people.
How hard is that to get those prescriptions filled?
Well, if you don't have any insurance, it's pretty hard. You just have to suffer through the pain.
Right. How are you healing up? Are you healing up well?
Yeah.
No more difficulties?
No. My leg kind of has this daze. You know, if I'm on it a lot, it starts to swell up. Give me problems.
Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case of loving you.
This is Ibrahim Bar, Life to Survive Radio. KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And today we in Portland, Oregon, and on Ground Zero in the houseless community. Our topic is health care in the houseless community. And today we here with
Freya Swanson.
Okay, Fran, how long have you been houseless?
This time since February.
Okay, and before then?
Off and on since 2000.
Okay. The situation, just give us maybe a half a minute on how you became houseless.
This last time, I had just gotten into my own apartment, and I decided to help a minister friend of mine out, a reverend. And I moved in with him and his family to help them out. I was paying $500 a month to live in their garage, and I woke up to him being on top of me.
Okay, so it was a bad situation.
Totally.
So you left.
Yes.
Good for you.
And I helped his daughter to get help.
Okay, so the same situation.
Yep.
Okay. Our show today is about healthcare in the houseless community.
So you say you've been houseless off and on. How do you see, I don't know if you have Oregon Health Plan or Medicaid.
I have Medicaid and Medicare both.
Okay.
I'm on Social Security.
You don't have Obamacare. Is that the same? Is that the same?
I
don't
know. It's the same.
It's
kind
the
of.
Same. So what do you think about, can we just say Medicaid
and Obamacare? There are some good parts about it, but there are some bad parts about it. Some of the prescriptions that I used to be able to get on it, I can't get anymore.
Yeah.
Or I have to pay for the whole amount.
And by us not having no income and no place to put our prescription by being on the street,
yes,
that becomes a problematic.
Yes, it does.
Okay.
For a lot of people.
Yeah. What about going to the hospital? I mean, before you had Obamacare, health care, I wanted you to talk about before and after. Before, how was you received in the hospitals when you got hurt, when your cuticle broke or whatever?
Badly most of the time. They look at how the person's dressed and what they bring in with them. But now it's as if they are more understanding and trying to help us a lot more.
Is it because this new thing with Obama?
I think it is.
Okay. By the doctors and the nurses, were these the people that was treating you or the receptionist that was treating you?
Both.
Both? Can you explain that then?
The receptionist gives you dirty looks and stuff when you come in.
No.
Especially if you bring in your bags with you of your stuff that you have to carry around with you. Now they're more understanding. They ask if you need help, and ask if the specialist can come down and talk with you to try and see what they can do to help you.
And what about the doctors? That's interesting, because I always thought the doctors did their job was to heal and cure a person, but it's to see you and schedule appointments and stuff.
Yes.
So can you tell us how the doctors treated you?
They only listen to about a third of what you need to tell them about what's going on with your health, and they assume the rest, and they try and treat you on that basis. And their bedside manner has gotten a lot worse.
Really?
Yes.
Even with Obamacare, the doctor is...
My last ER visit compared to my four prior was the best I've had in a while.
Uh-huh.
But it was because of which doctor it was. The other doctor that was in the ER had treated my friend, and she didn't get as well care for as I did.
So as usual, just like with the police, the city officials, houseless people, a store manager, it depends on who that person is.
Yes.
And you can't say everybody is this way, just like they say all houseless people is that way.
Correct.
Right. So some doctors treat you well, some don't.
Yes.
Some nurses treat you well, but how do all receptionists treat you the same way?
Lately they have been, yes.
Okay.
They've been trying to help us more.
Okay. In doing this and explaining to the doctors your situation, and they only listen half to you, only getting half the medical that you need.
Well, yes. It's as if, with my particular case, I have, just to name two, cancer and MS.
Yeah.
And they only ask me a couple of MS questions. They ask me more cancer questions than they do the MS, but it's the MS that's acting up.
Okay.
And they don't get the full picture by only asking half questions.
Oh, right, right.
So they can't treat the full effect.
With your cancer and MS, are you getting proper treatment?
At the moment, no, because all they want to do is put me in assisted living and forget about me, and I won't allow them to do that.
So you're saying that what they do, they would treat you for your cancer, but
yes,
not your MS.
Exactly.
And then when they treat you, they put you in assisted living and don't have no aftercare or no follow-up or nothing.
Exactly.
Like that. Wow, really. And have you reached a social worker or agent to tell them about that?
Yes, and they do agreements against them, but there's nothing that ever happens to them in regards to it. It's as if they get a slap on the wrist and nothing else.
Wow. So really, with Obamacare, I think, and maybe I'm wrong, but I mean, you can correct me, because I don't use it. I rely on a lie, and hopefully I don't never have to use it. But with Obamacare, they just, jimmy-rig you and put you back in the street.
Yes.
And
yes,
they don't
do.
Have no recuperating centers or no aftercare or no follow-up
not for
work.
Not the hospitals, but Central City Concern does have the Henry Building, the Recuperative Care Program.
Uh-huh.
That I learned about in the early 2000s after surgery.
Uh-huh. So after surgery or chemo, just told to go, or did they find you a place to recuperate?
I was pretty much told to just go. It was only because of a friend of mine that I was able to stay in a motel for a while until the American Cancer Society started paying my bill.
And how did that make you feel? I mean, how did it make you feel about it?
It made me feel less than a person. Wow. Less than a person, because after chemo, you're on that bathroom floor heaving your guts out for the first 5 days, if not 7 days. And then to have someone treat you like that after having your treatment, you want to give up, but you can't because you're literally fighting for your life.
And don't get me wrong, I'm trying to understand also. So are your pores open and stuff? And if you, they put you, cause that chemo opened you up. I mean, anytime you're on the inside, you get real, real hot. You open up. And in Portland, it get cold and it rains. And they put you back out on that street in the cold and rain.
Yes.
You're liable to get sicker, right?
I caught pneumonia, in fact.
Really? So did you go back to the hospital?
Yeah, they couldn't do anything about it because of going through the radiation and chemo. They cannot put you on antibiotics, so you have to just deal with the pneumonia.
Wow. And it's just amazing that you're here talking to me today. You know, you must be doing some good praying, right?
Yes.
Okay. And now you have is your cancer in remission? Your muscular sclerosis, that's what you have. Yes. How's that going?
It flares up from time to time. Uh-huh. My cancer's been getting a little bit worse. I have a new tumor in my right lung and a new tumor in my throat. You can probably tell my voice is going in and out.
What do you think should be done or added in or taken out with the Medicare? Because I don't think it was designed for the houseless people, and they forgot about us because that's what we are, invisible.
Yeah, we're invisible to a lot of people until we can start standing up for ourselves like we're trying to do.
Is it anything you want to add that could be put in there? Because people go through different things, and you need to put them, because somebody's going to go through what you went through or going through.
Yeah.
So what do you think could be added in this Medicare, Obamacare?
I think there should be a little bit more one-on-one asking if the person's okay and if their living situation's okay.
Yeah, okay, that's great.
Whether or not they can be helped.
Okay. And so do you think American Medical Association or Society should have special places in the hospital or off-site where people can get recuperative care?
I think both, actually. Mm-hmm. Some of them need the inpatient that have been released from, like, the mental hospitals and stuff, and some people need it for their regular medical, physical health.
Mm-hmm.
But we also need it in the communities so that we can learn how to live in our community, to excel at it.
Okay, that's good.
To survive.
Right. Okay, now what about they're giving you a prescription that you don't have money to prescribe to get it anyway. So how would that?
You have to be first in line at either a couple of the different agencies in the area,
uh-huh.
or you have to know someone that can help you to get online to go to the drug manufacturer to get signed up for their particular programs for different medications.
And for me, can you educate me also in the listening audience on which agency that people can go if they don't have the money to get their prescription filled? Because, you know, we hope houseless people listen to this also, this radio show.
There's the St. Underbassett's, which the people around downtown call it's Red Doors.
Right.
It's on the corner of 6th and Burnside. Okay. They help men and women both.
Okay.
There's Rose Haven that's at 18th and Irving, which does women and children.
Uh-huh.
There's Catholic Charities that helps both women and men on occasion.
Uh-huh.
Mostly just the women, depending on which program you're with.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes Salvation Army on 12th and Sandy on the northeast side helps with prescriptions. But those are the only ones that I know of.
Okay. Now, let's do a scenario or reenactment, you know, how they do on mainstream TV. Let's say I'm with police and clean and safe, and I come take your prescription. You just got them yesterday. Can you go back to the doctor and say, my prescription is gone, can you prescribe me another one?
They would ask you if you filed a police report.
Okay.
Would be the first questions out of the doctor's mouth. Mm-hmm. And when you say no, because it was the police that took it, they ask you what do you think expect you to do to do about it? Because it was the police that took it in the first place.
Right.
And yet those are the people that we're supposed to report it to. And yet it's them taking it. So it's a no-win situation.
So what if you lost your bag or somebody stole your bag? How can you get your prescription filled, another prescription?
You have to call the non-emergency police
in line and ask for an officer to come out and file a police report. You take that police report in with the police
badge number
and the card of the officer to your doctor and or the ER or your care, wherever you got that filled at, and they can give you another prescription.
Okay. So I didn't know that, and that's good to know. All you houseless people out there listening, this is something that you can do. Also, if you don't have enough money to get your prescribed medicine, these organizations would do that.
Yes.
I mean, do they do that? Is it a limited amount?
Or they do a limit.
It's
yes.
a limited amount.
And they have checked three different places to see which one's the cheapest.
Okay.
And they do the cheapest one that you check.
Okay. So now you're on the street, and how does that work with you, with your chemotherapy and MS without being inside? I mean, is that the good thing or bad
thing? Sometimes it's a good thing, sometimes it's a bad thing. It depends on the weather and what I have to get accomplished for that day.
Okay. And so people don't realize that neither, that it's people that live on the street with medical needs to be met, and they can't move around like people who live inside and get their medical needs met.
Correct.
And so they may look like they're...
Okay, but we're not.
They may look like they're lazy, but we're not. You just can't move at that time.
Exactly.
And it depends how the weather is.
Yeah.
Wow.
Some days are worse than others, but some days are better than others.
So, but you're doing okay right now, right?
Yes.
Okay, and we hope you continue to do okay, and we hope that not only the house community, but the medical community are listening to this radio show saying, wow, we need to help them. Now, what about sleeping on the ground where people don't understand things? Because concrete don't give in, your body give
in.
So do you think we need more physical therapists also for people in their body?
Yes, for occupational therapy and physical therapy, to help us to build up our muscles. The correct muscles,
right.
Not just the legs and the arms,
right.
But your back and stuff too.
Right.
Because when you're on the sidewalk sleeping, it starts hurting even more, and it's harder to get up and down in the mornings and at night, especially when you have to get up to go to the restroom.
And is Medicare or Medicaid or Obamacare, do they cover that?
It depends on its situation on whether or not they cover it.
Okay.
What I found.
So you probably had to have multifaceted needs in order to get the real need covered. You fly under, I have MS, and when you're going through that, it's, my back hurt too, and so.
Yes.
You just can't go in and say, I've been sleeping on the ground for 8 years or something, and my body just giving out, and I need physical therapy. They won't do that.
They won't do it.
Isn't that a shame?
It is a shame.
Well, shame on you medical people. Shame. All right. Anything else you want to say about health care in the houseless community?
Good luck to everyone out there that's having health issues.
Okay. Thank you much. Okay.
All right.
Stop.
This is Ibrahim Mubarak, and today we're in Portland in the houseless community, and our topic is health care in the homeless community. And today I'm here with...
Kerry White.
Oh, Kerry White. You was homeless, and now you recently got an apartment. And how's that going for you?
It's going pretty good. I'm getting used to being indoors again.
Good. And you've been outside for how long?
About 3 years.
Okay. Can you explain to me how was your health condition?
During the time I was on the street, my health wasn't that good. I had heart problems and... got that taken care of by getting a pacemaker put in, and then I ended up getting kidney cancer. I ended up having to have a kidney removed because of it. That was the only way they can get all the cancer in one shot.
In doing that, sure, you was in and out of the hospital, check on your health because you had these pains or this, your body letting you know something's wrong.
Correct.
So how many visits and stuff did you, if you can remember, just, you know, give us an inkling of...
Well, for the pacemaker, I did 2 trips to the hospital, and both times I had to have minor surgery to have a heart recorder put in the first time and then the pacemaker put in the second time. And then when I had my cancer in my kidney, I ended up having to go to the hospital twice, and the second time I went to the hospital resolved in surgery to have the kidney removed.
So in doing this, did you have health care?
When I had my pacemaker put in, I did not.
You know, give the listening audience an example of how were you treated when you didn't have health care?
I didn't get the main respect until my health insurance kicked in. The hospitals treated me decently.
What do you mean by little respect?
They'll at least check you out to see what's wrong, but that's about as far as it goes as far as getting the health. They give you all these prescriptions and everything, and you got no insurance, no income, so you got no way of filling them. And so they basically send you out the door in the same condition you're in, but with a little bit of hope.
In other words, you said they jimmy-rigged you and put you out there, and knowing you don't have no place to go to, you can either get sick again or even sicker.
Correct.
Okay. Now, how was the treatment when you did have health care?
They treated me with respect. They treated me like I was a human being. They did all the tests that needed to be done to find out what was causing the problem. That's when they found out I had the cancer. They scheduled the surgery, and I went through the surgery, and I got to stay in the hospital while I recuperated for a few days. And
so are you on Medicare or Obamacare, or are they the same?
Well, I'm on the Obamacare. It's called Family Care, basically organ health plan. But it worked for me to have the surgery I needed so the cancer wouldn't spread.
So you got good medical treatment once you got Obamacare. But how was the treatment towards you after the surgery?
After the surgery, I was sitting there in the hospital, and their person for services came in to see me, and she goes, well, you can't stay here, and there's no place to send you, so we're going to put you in a shelter for 2 days. They wanted me to go into a shelter that was infested with bed bugs, sleeping on a mat on the floor when I could barely even move.
So does this organ health plan, does it have aftercare in it?
I guess it don't.
And so this is something that people need to know. You know, you may get your leg cut off or your kidney taken out or your hand sold up, but the aftercare, you're going right back into the streets, right back into the environment.
They put you right back in the environment where it's cold, it's rainy, if you're homeless, it's dirty. Good way to get a bad infection, and you never know. The infection could really take over.
And then you also said that, you know, they give you prescription, and they know houseless people don't have money to fill those prescriptions. So how are they supposed to get that pain relief or get that medicine that helped them fight that infection or take that illness away?
Yeah, they give you the prescriptions. They expect you to be able to fill them. No income. You can't get them filled. So basically, you're stuck trying to do whatever you can to better yourself and take care of yourself the best you can. Sometimes the best you can get if you don't have the insurance or the income is ibuprofen over the counter. You end up just suffering.
What about when they took your kidney out and they was going to put you on the streets? What happened? I mean, did you go back to the streets or what happened?
Well, I didn't go back to the street. A lot of people ended up in my corner and supported me when they found out they were going to put me on the street. I ended up getting put in a motel on 6th Avenue and Broadway. I found out that one of our supporters was the one footing the bill. And I stayed in that motel for 3 weeks. And when I found out what the price of that motel was, I was supposed to be indoors for a month. But once I found out what the price of that motel was running, I said 3 weeks was enough and I left. And I went back out on the street, back to Right to Dream 2, and just finished my recovery there because my incision was closed up by then. It's just, I figured it was just too much for her, so I was kind to her. I emailed her and I thanked her for what she did. And I let her know that if there was anything that I could do for her in return, to let me know.
Organ health plan, Obamacare, what would you like to see put in today?
I mean, it covers all my prescriptions when I get those from the doctor. It covers my surgery and my hospital stay, but what I like to see added to it is the funding for, like, if I had to have that surgery again, the funding for it to cover the motel or a better place for me to go and or anybody to go and be able to recover without having to be on the street.
So that's the thing that we need to put a shout out that they need recovery centers and they need people to be able to pay for their prescriptions, because to me, what's the sense? I mean, it makes a lot of sense to get operated on because you're done, but why do that if you're going to put somebody back out to the street, back out to an environment? What if it was raining or cold and you got that open incision in you? You know, you can get all kinds of infections.
Well, you figure when I had my last surgery and had my kidney taken out, it was March. And so we were still in the cold spell. We were in just starting the rainy season. If I would have had to have stayed on the street, if I would have ended up having to stay at Wright's Dream 2 to recover, I would have been inside my tent 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, barely unable to move. I mean,
But you in a tent, getting up and down, wouldn't that have opened that incision?
It could have opened up that incision, yeah. Real easy if I would have had to have done it right away. I mean, when I came out of the hospital, I had about 24 staples in me.
Yeah.
And not only did I have to worry about my bedding catching them, but my clothes or something getting under them and causing a bad infection. And I really had to watch what I was doing.
Now let's talk about the aftercare also, about that if they do put you on the street with these incisions or in a shelter for 2 days, how are you going to eat? How
exactly.
Are you going to take a shower? How are you going to clean? Either somebody's going to clean your wounds and, you know, keep it, you know.
Exactly. If I would have ended up on the street after my surgery, there's no way I would have been able to shower because I could barely move. I kept my own incisions cleaned because they at least gave me what I needed to do that. And I mean, I had to have help just to get up out of bed. If I would have been at the shelter sleeping on a mat, nobody would have helped me get up off that mat. They would have expected me to do it on my own, and they would have kicked me out at 7 o'clock in the morning until 6 o'clock that night. And so I would have been out in the elements with an open incision, walking the streets, or at least sitting somewhere. I could barely walk.
Yeah, I mean, your muscles and your stomach dictate all your movements.
Yeah, when they had me walking in the hospital, I was able to go halfway down the hall and I was done.
And that was good, but what about the people who don't have that connection with Right to Survive or Right to Dream 2, or who don't have that support system? And you see a lot of them going to the street, they laying down, and people say, oh, they just lazy, they must be on drugs. Not realizing they could have just had an operation and with nowhere to go, and they put them on the sidewalk.
Correct. You know, if people, I feel sorry for the people that aren't connected with Right to Dream 2 or Right to Survive or any organization like we have here. I mean, I've seen a lady who broke her foot that wasn't connected with Right to Dream 2, Right to Survive, or any organization. Just so she can get around, she had to sit in a wheelchair and have her boyfriend push her around while they packed all their stuff around on top of it. And they slept on the sidewalk curb or in a doorway or wherever. And this is the lady that had a broken foot that couldn't walk and had all their stuff with them. I mean, it's crazy out there. Some people just don't care.
Let's give a good cheer to the doctors. Well, you know, I don't even think it's the doctor's fault or the nurse's fault. I think it's the social service, because the doctor's doing their job. The nurse is doing their job. The receptionist is doing their job.
When
we need social workers in these hospitals to see to it that these people is getting the proper care, need in that Obamacare and that Oregon health care or any health care for the houseless community, and have recuperating centers and proper aftercare.
Correct. I mean, we need the aftercare because there's a lot of people out there that need to have things done that have the same insurance I do, but they're afraid to get it done because they know that they're not going to get the proper care that they need.
So, and also, I think what we're hearing from what you're saying, it needs to be some type of money set aside where people can get their prescription filled.
Yeah, that would be nice. If there was an organization or funding or whatever.
Thank you much, Kerry White, and I pray and hope and Right to Survive hope that you finally made it. You're inside and your health grows and grows and grows.
Well, I'm doing good so far.
All right. Thank you much.
You're welcome. Yeah. Let it bump down.
And our topic is healthcare in the houseless community. And today we're here with...
I'm Camilo Marquez. I'm a retired psychiatrist. But the solution to all of this is to have single-payer universal healthcare that's publicly funded. And I think that the way that the Oregon health transformation is going, housing really should be considered as an essential part of a healthy situation. So if we're going to prevent people from getting sick, or we're going to keep people with chronic illnesses from deteriorating, we have to offer stability in housing.
Exactly, because one young lady, she have cancer and MS, and they trying to heal her cancer, but forgetting about her MS, and they putting her in the street. And sometimes she said when her MS flare up, if it's cold, she get pneumonia. And so she go in the hospital and she get that treatment, but then they put her right back in the street. One guy had his kidney taken out, right? And they sewed him up and they put him back out in the street.
It's all interrelated, because if we had adequate preventative treatment, a lot of people who become houseless because of their deterioration of their health, their mental health, that wouldn't happen. They would be able to remain healthy, keep working, or just keep their lives organized and not get into those situations where they lose what they need in order to continue to think that there ought to be enough understanding of the essential requirements so that the same support that we're looking for universal health care would go towards subsidizing affordable housing for people who are not able to take care of it on their own. And moreover, there should be programs that, you know, keep people healthy, keep people in the ability to work, keep people from succumbing to addictions, keeping them from falling into the hole of mental illness, and that way maintain stability and able to stay in a safe place. I mean, until we have adequate housing, we really have to think about, you know, if we're going to reduce our healthcare costs, we have to have a way for people who are homeless to recuperate. So, you know, certainly there needs to be some sort of transition between acute hospitalization and going back into the street, absolutely. You know, what the solution for that is, you know, on an institutional basis, I'm not sure. But, you know, I mean, I think that's something for the legislature to consider. How would we finance this? And to recognize that it would have some sort of a payoff in terms of reducing health costs. You know, the distress of people who are suffering from illnesses but who don't have adequate shelter.
Okay. Now, can you tell us the difference to the listening audience who don't know, like me? What's the difference between Obamacare and single payer?
There's a fundamental difference. Obamacare essentially relies on the present market-driven situation to provide healthcare through insurance companies. Single payer would eliminate the fragmentation of healthcare, all these different health plans. There would be one system. It would be paid for out of public funds that would be raised through payroll tax or income tax or specially dedicated tax. That's that, you know, we should be progressive. It should be based on what you're able to afford. It would enlarge the risk pool. It would have the ability to allow global budgeting so that all of these crazy situations where prices are not transparent and their care delivery is fragmented, where insurance companies reduce the network in order to control the amount that they reimburse. All this would be eliminated under a single system that would be available to everybody.
Now, how would single payer be financed and by who?
The financing of single payer is going to be a public fund. Mm-hmm. Just as it is with Medicare for the elderly. Medicare is financed through payroll tax deductions. It could be a single tax or it could be a group of different taxes. What we are working here in Oregon with Healthcare for All Oregon is to try to create legislation that would establish single-payer universal health care in this state that would be provided by your everyday practitioner. In other words, you could be able to keep your private practitioner. You would have the choice of wherever you wanted to go. The finance would be through dedicated taxes that are raised through the income tax or through a payroll tax. And as I mentioned, they would be progressive, and basically people would be paying what they could afford.
Okay, so has Medicare helped or hurt seniors on limited incomes such as Social Security?
Well, certainly it's a great benefit. You know, there are people who, what they're called dual eligible, people who are over 65 are all entitled to Medicare, but some of them have such low income that they're also eligible for Medicaid. In some situations, you know, where Medicare covers 80%, the Medicaid may pay the difference.
Now, would this Medicare, Obamacare, healthcare help the homeless who don't have income get their prescription filled?
Medicare includes prescription drugs. Mm-hmm. If you're on Medicaid, you also are eligible for prescriptions. Now, the question of whether or not you can get your prescriptions refilled, you know, I mean, I think that's going to be something that's going to be determined through your doctor and your pharmacist. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I think if you're talking about something like pain pills that may be addictive and where there's abuse, you're probably not going to be able to get those refilled.
Exactly.
But if you're talking about your blood pressure medication, I'm sure if you went back to your doctor and you said, I lost my pills, I need my pills to stay healthy, yeah, you would probably get another prescription. You know, the obvious thing about that question is that, you know, police shouldn't be raiding the homeless and taking their medication.
Exactly. Now, I got two last questions for you, and I'm going to put it in together because they sort of on the same format. Do Obamacare cover mental or physical therapy for the poor or the homeless? Because sleeping on that ground day after day, the ground don't give in, but your body give in, and you got all these bones and muscles that's aching, pain, and then you have people that's self-medicating and going through mental problems too. And I think a lot of that's not included in Obamacare or healthcare.
I mean, if you have a problem that can be diagnosed, recommended treatment is rehabilitation. Mm-hmm. That's a service that would be available. Of course, you know, you would have to have the referral of a doctor, you know, a rehab service. I mean, you know, I think that the question that you're raising is not something that's really about medical care, but something that is the basic issue of housing, and that is in order to maintain your health, your peace of mind, your, you know, ability to function, you need to have stability, predictability, some sort of sense of peace in your life. You know, certainly that is the underlying issue.
Exactly. And this is the problem that we trying to raise eyebrows with to the legislature and the government, that unhoused community don't have that stability. They in a different situation where they more apt to get sick or to suffer through physical pain more than mental pain, and along with mental pain. And there's nothing in this Obama healthcare that's designed to help people that acquire these unnecessary pain for sleeping outside, because it's always for the social status of house people.
Well, you know, I mean, I think that the idea of the Oregon health transformation, what they call the triple aim, where you have better care for cheaper costs for more people, the delivery of services to be not based on the need to cover individual services, but to cover preventive services, to cover situations such as you're describing with regard to housing, is going to end up, you know, saving money, but more important, saving people's health and peace of mind.
So why isn't that implemented in Obamacare? But that's what you're fighting for, right?
Well, you know, I think that they're trying to do it in Oregon through the Oregon Health Plan and the coordinated care organizations. You know, I mean, I think the community, you know, while they're complaining about taxes and the budgets are being cut, you know, the first people that they're going to cut are the ones who are the weakest, and that's going to be in the houseless community. But I think that if we were able to provide good healthcare system, we would have less costs in this area. We would, the community would save money by providing adequate services that are preventative and keep people out of the hospital.
And that's the nut in the shell, because if the houseless community don't have the proper health care, you heal them, then they come back, you're wasting time and money. Then they go back to the street, then they come back. It's a constant revolving door.
Yeah.
And if they could find proper, adequate housing, they won't be frequent to the hospital as much as they are now. And that's what's costing the money. And it's cheaper to house people than to have shelters of them living on the street.
Yeah, you know, I should think that this kind of a program that you're talking about could be coordinated both, you know, in terms of the social services that the houseless need together with the healthcare services. I mean, it seems to me that, you know, innovations, you know, certainly would go a long way towards, you know, making delivery care more efficient and people's welfare better by keeping out of the healthcare system, by being well, being healthy.
So can you let us know what people can do to help change the healthcare, everybody, not just individual or social status, but for everybody?
The next thing that I'm going to be doing is going out to Oakland to a labor for single-payer campaign. We really need to have as much support for this, and we're trying to advocate through the unions to get people to support this.
So they need to contact their union to find out what they can do to support for.
Well, I think that we got to encourage the unions to be more active, because, I mean, unions have been struggling and healthcare has not been on their priority. Although they, you know, when they're going up for a contract, certainly healthcare benefits is important. But this gets back to the basic idea that we need to replace the employer health system with universal healthcare, and we hope that unions will be supportive of that.
Thank you much. You've been most important.
Somebody help me. That's work.
This is not healthy.
Oh, man.
I am not wealthy.
What I do, have the power to break the chains.
Doing what's right, you. This is Lisa Faye with Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM. And today we have been listening to interviews from people who are working to change the healthcare system, and from actual patients from the houseless community who have experienced trouble finding help with their health care and the various issues that are not being addressed by their providers. Stay tuned each month to Right to Survive Radio here on KBOO every second Wednesday of each month at 6 p.m. Follow us on Facebook,